The recordings have started.
Thank you. We are, this is the 25th meeting of the CWG, and we're the 3rd of March at 1702 UTC. The chair for today's call is Lise Fuhr. Jonathan sends his apologies. I'll turn it over to Lise.
Thank you, Grace. Yes, and I will, as the co-chair of the CWG, chair this call. I'd just like to know if there is anyone who's not in the Adobe room but only on audio. Could you please let Grace know? I'll just make a short pause and hear if anyone's out there.
Grace, Cheryl, I'm still not in the AC room, but I will be shortly. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Anyone else only on audio? Nope.
This is Shiva. Shiva, I'm only on audio. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Shiva's only on audio. Thank you, Shiva. Okay. Well, welcome to this 25th call, and well, yeah, since the last meeting, there's been a lot of activity on the list, which is very good, and we need to stay focused on the delivery of an actual proposal. Later this week, the co-chairs will send out a work plan, and that will be our best assessment on how we can get a draft proposal out for the public consultation after our face-to-face meeting in Istanbul. And there's been some emails on the list regarding the work methods. And I saw Jonathan send out a clarification that actually there's no longer the RFP groups. We're going to work in design teams. And those design teams are going to try and deal with the issues while we're waiting for the legal advice on the actual principle of the models we have in play. And we will use the former RFP coordinators to assist the co-chairs with the oversight of the relevant corresponding sections of our draft proposal version 2. And, a part of this is actually where I'm also going to have a look at the ESSAC document 69 in the context of our emerging proposal. So with this, we're going to discuss, and I know we would try to have these Tuesdays meetings as only discussing content. But this will be some discussion of content, but we're also going to have a final review of our design team methods, and I'll also like to review the structure of the CWG proposal since we sent it out so close to the meeting last Thursday. But first, we'll have a go of the review of the design team methods, and Jonathan has sent out the step-by-step for design teams, and I have sent out a list of the different design teams until now. We as co-chairs will prioritize this list, and we will do this also by the end of this week, and we will focus on operational issues in the way we prioritize. We will have a focus on the overall work plan, and at least we will also have a look at the resources to for the review team. So I would like to hear if there's any general comments to the step-by-step. And as I said, we will review this the different design teams according to the overall work plan, and we will get back to you. But I'd like to hear if there are any comments or questions regarding this. And Grace put the step-by-step on the screen in the Adobe room. Don't see any questions at the moment. Nope. Okay. Martin Boyle, your hand is up.
Thanks, Lisa. I got a little question about selection of or identification of the participants in the design teams. I've seen one case where the participants have been named as the design team was proposed, and others which just leave it to be confirmed. I had in my mind that people were going to be able to volunteer as and when design teams were being set up. Have you set rules, or is it just a matter of first come, first served on any design team that's set up? Thank you.
Well, that's a very good question. And actually, Jonathan touched upon this at the last call. To call them rules is such a strong word, but we will, if there's too many people who want to join the same design team, we will do a selection as co-chairs. And this selection will be according to whether the qualifications of the actual participants, do they have the time and will they commit themselves to do the work, because this is going to be very intense work that needs to be done within a couple of weeks. So that's going to be another one. And of course, we'll try to have included the relevant parties. So you see, we have an IMP proposal where we need to have the GAC, and we would also need to have some from the CC community, so that would be in play for that design team. So, yes, there are going to be rules or rules, but more an assessment of what can the different participants give to the actual group. Thank you. Any other questions? Doesn't seem to be the case, so I will move on to the next, and that's the review and scope of Design Team A and Design Team B and the launch, and the abbreviation DTA is Design Team A and DTB is Design Team B. So actually, at the last call, we mentioned that we would prioritize three design teams as the test design teams, and that was going to be the SLE, which Paul Kane is lead on, the IAP, which Ellen McGibber is lead on, and the third is the CSC, where which is still in process, but Donna Austin has volunteered to be a lead on this, I think. There's been sent out two scopes for the Design Team A and B. That's the SLE and the IAP, and it's very good to see there's a lot of activities on the list regarding the scope, and we as co-chairs are very observant of this, and we follow this. It's good and valuable to have input. At the same time, it's also important that we give the design teams a chance to work, and it's Well, we need to discuss the actual outcome of those teams. So it's not that those teams go away and come back and then it's finalized. It's actual for the group to discuss when these teams come back. So it's very important that our focus is to move ahead and to be constructive in any criticism we're having in order to help to develop the actual outcome. And I don't know if you recall, but those teams will have actual lists. So every team will have their own specific list where the members of the team will discuss. So you cannot interact with those, but it's possible to see all the interaction on the list. So this is going to be very transparent. And I see that Paul Kane has joined, and as the lead on the design team A, which is the IANA service level expectations, Paul Kane, could you give us an update on your team? Thank you. That's a lot of background now. Is Paul? Oh, okay. Are you there, Paul?
I'm not sure if it's my end or what.
I can hear you, but you're very faint.
Can you hear me, Lisa? I'm not sure.
Yeah, now you're better. I can hear you.
I assume you can hear me because... Okay, I will shout some more then. Let's see if I can... So I have the privilege of taking the lead on the SLE. What we are tasked with is trying to review the status quo, and I have to say, having undertaken a performance review of the status quo, ICANN IANA is doing a very good job in terms of updating the root zone and also updating the FUIS. And if we could bring the slides up whilst I run through who is on the design. The intent is to keep the design team quite small. We have three representatives from the GTLDs, and those are Jeff Newman, Elaine Prius, and Jeffrey Ackhaus. And from the CCTLDs, we have Jay Daly, Patricio Poblete, and myself. Those parties were selected by tips, and as mentioned, we've tried to keep the group small so it gets significant work done. We hope to be able to, well, I'm very pleased to say that our email lists will be, so any member of the community will be able to see what is being discussed within the small design team. And also, we have reached out to IANA staff and to ESSAC, and they are very kindly agreed to provide us with information, more as liaison as required, may be best handled privately. They will be contained in our report, but as we're going through the process, it might just keep, you'll see from the survey there are some areas which may be best handled discreetly in the public domain. But on the whole, all comments will be open to all to view, but we would very much welcome just being able to press on with our job, all being well, having an initial report out towards the middle of the initial report will highlight the process flow as we believe it to occur at the IANA, but we will ask IANA staff just to verify that we are on the right track. So, unfortunately, I'm on a very bad internet link, and I hope you can hear me, but I need the slides that have been sent. So if someone else could drive the slides, that would be welcome. I'm assuming the first slide is being displayed. So what we have done, actually I have done in conjunction with my staff, we've broken the work into two areas. One is to review the current performance. The other is to come up with a framework for basically trying to define the steps involved. Really bad. Sorry. Right, the first slide. This is data taken from the published reports of ICANN on the IANA site. And you will see 565 transactions to 565 data points fundamentally. From September 2013 to January 2015. I'll just stop. If someone could write in the... Okay. If you can hear me, could someone just acknowledge they can hear me because my internet link is bad.
Yes, Paul, we can hear you.
But, Paul, do you want me to... There is some comments in the chat. Do you want me to read those aloud for you?
So the bottom line is the process between... But if I may, can I just go through the slides and then deal with the comments at the end? Because I'm really blind here.
That's fine. Go ahead, and we'll catch up for the chat after that.
Thank you very much. So the first slide, we looked at the IANA reports, and what we were reviewing was the period from the validation date, in other words, once ICANN IANA had completed its checks and dispatched update to NTIA, then subsequently to VeriSign for inclusion, or if it was just a whois, it was very favorable in that the average time was around about, it was less than 2 days. This is also including weekends. So if someone had submitted an application to NTIA for process approval, let's say on Friday afternoon, or it went on Friday afternoon, NTIA would not receive it until Monday morning because Pacific time they would have gone home, effectively. NTIA would have gone home. So NTIA were taking around about two days, maybe 3 days, to actually process it on average. The majority were actually processed either 1 day or 2 days, and that is skewed going out. 27 transactions took longer than 9 days, and this is where I think one needs to be careful, and I would welcome input from IANA as to why there was a delay, but I believe it is outside the it's outside of ICANN's control, fundamentally. ICANN have done a good job in processing the requests. 13 took long.
Paul, you're breaking up.
You're breaking up, Paul.
Paul, are you there? Do you want us to call you, Paul? Call out for you? Paul?
Liz, this is Grace Abu Hamid. We'll work offline to find a way to get Paul back into the Adobe Connect.
Okay. And while we're waiting for him to get back, I'll try and just do a quick presentation of Alan McGillery's IAP group. That's DTB. And I don't know if we can get his scope document up on the screen. Thank you. Unfortunately, Alan is not able to be here, so he sent his apologies. And I've seen there's been a lot of writing on the list regarding the IAP. But it seems that especially the email from Chris and Alan got solved by they agreed on that this design team is only going to consider in principle whether there should or should not be a mechanism for assessing the delegation, redelegation decision if it's according to policy. So this is going to be more a design team that consists of a survey and not an actual proposal going to be built. More, is there a need for an IAP regarding the delegation, redelegation issue related to CCTLDs? And I know that Martin Simon is on the group and Chris Despain volunteered to be there. Elise Lindenberg has also volunteered to be on this group from the GAC and Norway. And it would be nice to have one more person attending this group from the GAC. So if anyone from the GAC would be willing to join, it would be preferable. But this is not going to be actual developing the actual structures, and furthermore, it's more going to be a survey and to find out if there are a need or not for an IAP. And I don't know if there's any questions for this group. Seems like Paul is back. Are you back, Paul? Or is it another one not on mute? Okay. Regarding the last team that I hope will get started during this week, the CSC, where we have done at Austin, and also I know that Stefan Johnson has also volunteered, and we hope to have a scoping document out from those guys soon. And I see Stefan writing, yep, in the chat. So, I see that we're still working on getting Paul to join by phone. Grace or Brenda, should I go on, or do you think it just take a minute to get him on the phone?
Liz, this is Grace. I think you can go ahead, and we'll keep working on it.
Okay. Good. Well, if there's no further questions, except that we still need the presentation to be finished by Paul on the SLE, where there were some questions, I think we should move on to review the structure of the CWG draft proposal version 2. I don't know if we need to have it up on the screen, but because it's a quite long document, but we actually discussed this at the last meeting too. That we need to. This is our actual. It's structured after our RFP, and it's a framework that will serve as a guideline for this group on how the final proposal will look like. It was sent out prior to our meeting last Thursday, and a lot of people commented in the chat that they didn't have had the time to have a proper look at it. Now you've had the chance, so I don't know if you have any comments on this. I can tell you that we will try and keep track on the different design teams compared with the draft. We will reference the different parts that are covered by the design team in the document, and we will also have a look at if there are areas or issues that need to have a design team in order to flesh out this part of the proposal. And as you saw on the email list, it's not only the RFP3 that we are having design teams for. It's also the other RFP structures 4 and 5. So we will use the design teams as an easier way to get chunks done. And I know there were some at the last meeting expressing that they were quite concerned that we didn't use the work that already had been done. So we would also try and see if the RFP teams have worked on issues to remind the different design teams to have a look at this. And I'll make a short pause to see if anyone is having any questions to this structure of our CWG draft proposal version 2.0. And I see Siva is asking, how exactly is RFP4 reconstituted? Are there design teams that would work on transition implication? Yes, I think there should be design teams working on different transition implications. And by having design teams, it's easier to focus on the specific issues that, so you kind of have it in smaller chunks and can easier work as an agile design team instead of having this whole group working on a lot of issues. So we're trying to use the design teams as an agile way to work on this. So what are the design teams to work on transition implications? Are they yet to be proposed? Yes, I think they are to be proposed, and that's actually what I was trying to say, that we will have a look at the this structure and see what's covered by the current list. Is there a need for other teams looking at other issues? So if we find there are issues on RFP 4 that need to be worked on, we would address this and have a design team look at this.
Lisa?
Yes? Cheryl?
Sherilyn. Thanks, Sherilyn.
Sorry, I didn't see your hand. Yes, sorry. Go
That's
ahead. I'm glad you called on me. Thank you. Sorry. Go ahead.
It was just a gentle nudge, Lisa. It's okay. I put my hand up in response to Siva's question that you read out, and I just wanted to point out to him, of course, that in the sections, which I think is around the pages 20 on, in this proposed draft, he will find section 4 still under existence, section 5 under existence, 1, 2, 3, all of which map directly to the original RFPs 1 through, in fact, 6. And so, you know, there's still text, et cetera, that needs to be developed and done. So these things haven't disappeared. They're being, as you said, attacked in a different way. And I would think that some of the specific work products to date out of RFP 4 would also map quite specifically to some DTs a little later on. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cheryl, for that clarification.
I'm back again, Lisa, if it helps.
Okay. Good. Okay, so we will make a quick jump back to the design team, and I'll get back to this after we finish with the Paul's design team A. Okay, go ahead, Paul.
Which slide did you get to? Shall I start again?
Paul, this is Grace. We're on slide one.
Okay, slide one. Okay, thank you. Okay, apologies to you all. I'm in a very remote location, away with my wife for an anniversary, so I'm surrendering that to be on this call. So what we have done is we've broken the... I'll start again, if I may, and I apologize for repeating myself. The members of the design team, there are three GTLDs, Jeffrey Ackhouse, Jeff Newman, and Elaine Prius, and three CCTLDs, Jay Daly, Patricio Poblete, and myself. The individuals who are nominated by the representatives, the CWG representatives, and we've purposely tried to keep the design teams small and very focused, mainly because we hope at the close of business today that our work will be, or our emails will be in the public domain, so members of the community can see what we are doing and the speed at which we are trying to get this report or the first part of this issue done. To help in that regard, we have been in contact with ICANN IANA staff who have been very helpful, and I hope they will act as a liaison to us, and also ESSAC have also offered to give us any input that we deem is necessary or considered necessary as and when. So the starting off point was to review the performance reports that are published by ICANN, IANA, and at the high level, I have to say the evidence is that the current workflow, which includes NTIA's involvement, is pretty efficient. The first slide shows 565 data points. Whilst no great significance should be applied to mean, mode, or median, the overall message to take away, which includes weekends, is that from the time the request is dispatched to NTIA to the time the request is completed primarily takes either the same day or one day or 2 days, and then it slowly drops off. But bearing in mind Pacific times, so on Friday afternoon or Friday 2 o'clock onwards, if IANA submits to NTIA a request, NTIA will not get that request until effectively Monday morning. So you have Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You have a four-day counting window in that arena. During the working week, NTIA seem to be turning the requests around very quickly. VeriSign seem to be consistently doing their part of introducing the update within about sort of around 2 hours of the time of receipt. But VeriSign do checks as well on the request coming in. And so the first graph, first slide, there were 565 data points. 27 transactions took longer than 9 days, and 13 transactions took longer than 12 days. Now, we hope to have discussions with IANA as to why this is. Those discussions may be on the mailing list, or they may be in private, depending on the reasons. Irrespective, in our report, we will make sure that all readers of the report are aware of the reasons. So that's that. The second slide, so the first slide covers all transactions, and now if we move to the second slide, we've broken that down into CCTLD updates. These are root zone and WHOIS database changes. Once again, from the time of validation to completion, we have 323 data points. 7 transactions took longer than 11 days. 18 transactions took longer than 8 days. Those are not shown on the graph. So, again, the take-home message is the IANA service is relatively efficient when it comes to sending to NTIA the request and getting it completed. Remember, when NTIA are out of this frame, these numbers, these delays, or this delay would effectively be removed. If one looks at the IDN updates that took place once again within the same period, September 2013 to January 2015, there are 55 data points where 4 transactions took longer than 8 days. Now, I want to emphasize that this is from the registry validation. So the way in which the workflow happens is that the registry sends a request in for a name server update, a DS record update, or changing to their WHOIS information. More or less instantly, in real time, there is acknowledgement, an auto-respond from IANA that says, we've received your request. And then I can, IANA, do checks on the data received. And then, having done those checks, they succinctly confirm the check that is being requested, and then they send a validation email to both the admin and the technical contact. So what we are doing is measuring from the validation point through to completion. And further on, you'll see some registries are slow at undertaking the validation. Although ICANN have done their job within about a day on average, ICANN IANA have done their job within a working day, some registries are somewhat slow. Within GTLD space, there are 176 data points, of which the majority are completed within 2 days, and 4 transactions took longer than 7 days. The next slide. As I mentioned,
validation is the issue. So ICANN IANA have identified what changes need to be done. They have passed the ICANN IANA test, but the registry operator, as in the technical and admin contact, needs to validate the request. And you can see that in some instances, the registry operator is slow in validating the request. There are some 20 days out from the initial. In fact, there are some that go further than that. But the majority do update their requests more or less in near real time to validate the change. But as the graph shows, some registry operators are slow to validate their change. So the next question is sort of what sort of weekly flow is there? You will see, which is most interesting, some activity taking place on Saturday and Sunday, both at ICANN IANA and also NCIA and also at VeriSign. So those scenarios are somewhat, they're a bit of an anomaly at the moment, but obviously they could have been a crisis situation, but it is also showing that the system is working. Out of interest, the best day for submitting an update request seems to be Tuesday. So these statistics, this graph, is not particularly representative in that it's taken over the duration of the survey period and doesn't relate to an individual transaction. That's what the other graphs were doing. But it's quite an interesting graph just to show you. And that concludes the survey, or that concludes our preliminary review. We're wanting to do greater analysis. This work group has broken into two work sections. One is to identify the process and the process flow and to document that. And then I think we can comfortably say that the IANA ICANN service is quite efficient at the moment. NTIA have varied between same-day transaction and four-day transactions. VeriSign are pretty efficient within 2 hours-ish for their updates. So we've broken into two workflows just because we're under pressure to try and get a draft document out. I would hope we can get a draft document out by the middle of next week, which will address the first phase, which is primarily to identify the workflows, starting from things as basic as how long does it take to get a username and password, what is the time average time taken to get a reissue of a password in case a registry manager has lost it, all the way through the workflow of the IANA. So, as I say, I'm hoping from close of business today there will be a mailing list available, and so any member of the community can see our work. But we have tried to keep the group very focused on service delivering the report as a draft, which will then be fed back into the CWG group for discussion and potential refinement. That's my update.
Thank you, Paul. I can see, well, there was a question from Pritz on, or a remark that you might want to reply on, that says one purpose of the SLA team should be to determine the process procedures by which SLAs are amended in the future. Do you have any...
We at the moment, we are not looking at that. What we're trying to do is identify the baseline, which we are doing by analyzing the past performance, which, as I say, is pretty good, identifying the steps that are required. We are happy to make recommendations, but the object, as I understand it, is to try and get this item of work done and dealt with very efficiently, and then so it doesn't impede the opportunity for transition. And to that end, we will be soliciting and inviting ICANN staff or IANA staff help in just filling in the blanks so we can have a developed, well-thought-through program. We could look at that issue, Kurt, if you would like us to, but if I may, let's have that at phase four. In other words, the first phase is identify the workflow. The second phase is identify the time parameters that are considered reasonable for an SLE. The third is an escalation procedure, some of which may be outside of IANA's remit or control. For example, if a registry is not validating the change, that is not IANA's fault. It could be we could streamline the process earlier on so there was real-time updates and so real-time checking so the registry manager or the technical admin contact can verify at the time and we might make that recommendation. It's not a giant technical leap. One of the things we have highlighted is that potentially some issues or some requests have been approved by IANA, have been approved by NTIA, and when VeriSign do their tests, their supplementary tests, problems have been found which have actually sent the application back to the registry manager. So maybe it might be prudent to have the automated tests that VeriSign are doing over at the front end rather than the back end, just to streamline it. But at the moment, we're just trying to work out where we are today, so we have a baseline, what the time periods should be, what the escalation process should be, and then possibly we could look at Kurt's suggestion. But that's subject to time, I think.
Thank you, Paul. I can see Olivier Crépin-Lebon has his hand up. Olivier?
Thank you very much, Lisa. It's Olivier Crépin-Lebon speaking. Can you hear me correctly?
I can.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much for this very interesting presentation and certainly detailed list of the work that your group is going to or is proposing to work on. I know that at the beginning of your presentation, you mentioned that the SLE group will start by reviewing the status quo, and that, I guess, is the current SLAs that are in place. And I wondered whether, I mean, is it the right time now to build on something like this and to add SLEs and go further? I'm just wondering whether we're not sort of, I'm not going to say reinventing the wheel. Forgive me for saying something that provocative, but it looks to me as though we're starting to over-engineer things a little bit for a plan which we're going to send to the U.S. government.
So the reason, the distinction between the SLA and the SLE is very simply that there will be parties that are not contracted nor wish to be contracted with ICANN, IANA. So it's a service level expectation rather than a service level agreement. With respect to reviewing the current status quo, that is exactly what we are doing in the real world. Rather than having some academic situation where it says 23 days, that would be, or effectively, is not the real world. So there are some on the group that are trying to use this as an opportunity to really tighten down the SLE to being fully automated, real-time transactions, job done in seconds. That is not the position I am advocating at this juncture. I don't want that to hold up this transition pose. I would personally quite like it for a certain number of CCs, but what we're trying to do is take the performance levels of today, make sure they are documented, and hold those as the benchmark.
Thank you, Paul. That's very helpful.
Okay. Other questions? Greg? Go ahead.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. this may not be really a major point of what you're saying, but the distinction between SLEs and SLAs implies that for those parties who are contracted, that these SLAs would be part of the contractual obligations to them. Is that suggesting then that all of the registry agreements will now be amended to add IANA SLAs to them? Is that something that we're a place we want to go?
So just on that point, my understanding, and I'd be guided by the GTLD community, my understanding is the SLAs that the GTLD community have to adhere to are significantly stricter and much tighter than the SLE that we are advocating for the IANA. So if one were to take the ICANN GTLD registry SLA that ICANN requires, the transaction times are much, much tighter than what we are advocating. Again, what I'm trying to emphasize is we're trying to take the status quo as the benchmark, not trying to push to the same standard of SLA that ICANN requires from GTLD registries. I think we need to try and keep momentum for the transition process.
I certainly agree with that last sentiment. I just didn't realize that IANA SLAs were anywhere in any registry agreements.
No, sorry, correction. The for the GTLDs that have agreements with ICANN, part of their agreement is a performance SLA. And basically, IANA is like a GTL. I mean, it's a registry. Whichever way you describe it, it is still a registry. What I am not advocating nor proposing is that we require the IANA to live up to the same standards that ICANN requires of GTLD registries. What we're trying to do is move to a situation where the status quo is monitored and effectively captured, rather than, as I say, the standard that ICANN insists of the GTLDs. If I've caught your question correctly.
No, I think actually the issue I'm getting at is I don't think that IANA, if we remove the NTIA contract from the mix and don't add any new contract from the mix, I don't think IANA itself is contractually obligated to anybody, GTLD or otherwise, to meet any SLA. So I think they're really SLEs for everybody, unless we put them in a different, unless we put them in a contractual package, which we may do.
I don't want to go down that route. SLEs are what I'm dealing with at the moment.
No. And Greg, it's Lisa for the record. I think while your question is very relevant, it's not for this design team to deal with that kind.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that the SLE distinction, I think, is not a real distinction.
Okay.
Thanks.
Point taken. Okay, thank you, Greg. Any other issues on the Design Team A, which is the SLA, SLE? No. And I see a question from Shiva about the IAP. And while it's difficult to understand what possibly could go wrong with IANA operations in the context of a process such as IAP, it's a basic question, but is it likely that the IANA operator would act in a manner that's partial to a GTLD, CCTLD, or a nation state? Well, it's a difficult question if it's likely or not. And actually, the IAP is this is going to discuss if a process has been followed or not, as it is. And the IAP is actually not this part, the CCTLD delegation, redelegation IAP is only going to make a survey to discuss if the CCs are want an IAP regarding this issue or not. and not how to solve it. And what you're questioning is actually, I think, going to be discussed also within the accountability group, but they have specifically said they would not deal with CCTLD delegation redelegation. So this is a very specific IAP survey design team. Okay. Any other questions on the design team? Not. I will move on to review the structure again. And I don't know, and I didn't really get any feedback on if there's any comments on the actual structure on the draft proposal, or are people happy with it, or don't think it will work? And if there's completely silence, oh, Donna Austin, go ahead. Your hand is up.
Thanks, Lisa. I guess I just have a question. Is the process that you've identified, is that flexible, or is it the way you would like to see these design teams roll out?
I'm not sure I understand the question. The process in the process that we're having with the proposal and the design teams in general?
Yes. So it seems to be reasonably well thought out, but I'm just wondering whether there's any flexibility if necessary.
Oh, we hope there is a lot of flexibility, because that's one of the key issues, that we should be flexible in order to if an issue arises, to grab it and work with this in the design team, instead of having teams that are really looking at the whole RFP3 or the whole RFP4. We're trying to have chunks, and that's in order to be flexible and agile. I know agile is such a modern word, but I hope that the design teams, they will focus on smaller issues, work within a couple of weeks, and get back to the group with a proposal that will be discussed. So actually, we hope it's flexible, and we hope that these three smart groups will prove the concept. And also that, we will have a work plan by the end of this week where we will have a better overview of if they're missing anything, should we have more design teams. Donna, your hand is still up. Do you want to comment on that?
No. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions or remarks to this one? Nope. But anyway, while we're talking about flexible, it's still possible, and it will be all along the way, to suggest design teams to the list, and it's on the website, so it's possible to send in proposals, and as we say, we'd like you, if you send in a proposal, to give a scoping document with the actual proposal. We know there are quite a few on the list, and we will evaluate those. Okay. Then we are dealing with issue 5, update on the client committee work, where there's been quite a a lot of work done, and that's going to be Greg, who will give us an update on this. Thank you. Greg?
Thank you. Greg Shatton again. So I guess we are up to the client committee. So we, over the course of the last several days, The client committee met with representatives of the three shortlist firms on conference calls that were, in two cases, 90 minutes in length, and in one case, 60 minutes in length. Each of the firms had several attorneys, generally partners, some senior counsel, on the call, each representing a different practice area, a different skill set that overall went into our needs. In each case, the corporate governance person was the kind of the main event in the discussion. We had a set of questions that we had kind of put together in advance. To some extent, we followed the questions. To some extent, we let the conversation flow. In the end, felt that we got the answers to the questions that we wanted answered in each of the calls. We had one call on Thursday, one call on Friday, and one call on Monday. We circled up after, not long after the Monday call, to kind of debrief and to discuss our thoughts on each of the three firms. We wanted to do it while it was all fresh in our minds. We did have Grace Abu Hamid from staff taking notes, but nonetheless, actual impressions are important, and those, you know, can tend to fade or jumble together over time. And I think that for all of us who were on the call, and I'd say that the Jonathan was not on the call, so from the client committee, it was myself, Martin Simon, and Lisa Fuhr. We did also have two representatives from ICANN Legal, John Jeffrey and Sam Eisner, as well as Kevin Espinola, who were involved in being on the calls, but they stepped back from the discussion of the firms and choosing between the firms, and I think really were sensitive to not overstepping a relationship, and that, you know, this was a client committee decision to make, not a joint decision to make. So it was really the discussion between between the three of us, and Jonathan had given us his proxy, since he's traveling and is in Tokyo, I believe, and therefore time challenged to participate, and wanted us to go forward. No decision has been made yet, but they're really, among the three firms, a clear front runner has emerged. And I think our process next is to concentrate with that front runner very quickly on the second level of inquiry, which is really the nuts and bolts of the engagement itself, which really falls into two categories. One is designing or modifying the typical design of an engagement to match the need for transparency and accountability and a kind of a public process, as opposed to the very discreet, confidential, and privileged process that is sine qua non for the average legal counseling relationship. I think, you know, all three firms had some good ideas on that. None of them, you know, were going to be definitive on it because it is something to sit and plan a little bit. But all have been quick. The firm we're going forward with in terms of the secondary level of exploration had a nice take on it, which is that it could be viewed as much as a consulting relationship as a typical legal advice or legal work relationship, which I think all of us rather like that twist on that that view. So we have asked them to quickly come up with some high-level thoughts on how to restructure the typical engagement model to meet our particular needs. And they do have experience in dealing both with public companies and with NGOs and other entities that have more sunshine law. In one case, the board of a major public university, which is under sunshine law, therefore a lot of what was done was very public. And also figuring out how to be very public and transparent to the group, to the CWG as a whole. Second category of what we're looking for further feedback on is kind of the structure of the fee relationship with and any other aspects of that side of the relationship, the engagement letter itself, which is the form of retention agreement that U.S. law firms use typically is called an engagement letter, and how they would rejigger that a bit again to reflect the relationship, and also, you know, how to be, you know, cost effective, time effective. All three firms indicated they were ready to hit the ground running. They were all enthusiastic. So I think that, you know, they're ready to go. They've got their people in place to do this. So in terms of timing, really hopeful that we can move forward quickly. In terms of providing information on the identity of the three firms, I have checked with or requested from all three firms that we be allowed to reveal their identity, which is not typical. Two of the three firms have replied in the affirmative. I'm still awaiting a response from the third firm. That's while all three firms have strong California presences, the one I'm waiting for actually is the only one that where my contact person is in California. So that, to some extent, reason for a slightly greater delay. The other two contact people were on the East Coast, so 3 hours ahead. So at this point, we also want to kind of bring the CCWG up to speed on our view of which firm we think is kind of the front runner. Confirm that, you know, they don't have any rabid objection to where we've come out. Wouldn't necessarily change our view, but again, it's going to be much more effective for one firm to be advising both, especially keeping in mind that we do have to meld a good deal of their work back into ours at some point in the process before this lands on the desk of the NTIA. And I would say that all of the firms are you know, cognizant of what's going on in D.C., understand that doesn't necessarily drive every decision that we or conversation that we have here, but it's it can't be eliminated from the ultimate equation of a successful proposal. One of the things that, the other things that we're doing. Let me just say that with the two firms that are not front runners, in part that was based on not having as not feeling that they were quite as well. I wouldn't say qualified. All these firms were extremely well qualified for this relationship. But that each of their approaches were a bit different. The team felt a bit different to us. To some extent, you do go on, I wouldn't quite say gut instinct, but there is a judgment, a qualitative judgment process that is important in choosing, you know, the fit of who you'd want to work with, and the feeling that the fit was best with the firm that's a front runner, and that with the other two, the fit wasn't quite there. The focus was a little bit different. The first firm we met with kind of felt like they were looking at this more like a transaction rather than a corporate governance engagement. And to be clear, corporate governance can include structures and restructuring as well as rules and processes. So it's that's not to exclude anything from it, but just that this isn't a deal, not an M&A deal in that sense. In addition, just in terms of conflicts, and while neither firm was conflicted out in the kind of legal definition of what constitutes an ethical conflict that would require a firm to withdraw from a representation or not to take a representation, it turns out kind of in the small world department that one of the lawyers put forward by the first firm was the direct supervisor of Kevin Espinola when he was at that firm. That was not why that firm was chosen in the first place. It's a leading U.S. firm, kind of all the gin joints in the world, the governance specialist that they put up happened to be Kevin Espinola's the partner that Kevin worked for when he was a younger lawyer. Kevin now, of course, is at Jones Day and is kind of taking a lot of the day-to-day counseling in these very matters in his relationship with ICANN. So there was a feeling that wasn't great. It was completely coincidental. Indeed, they have other governance people at the firm. We could have asked them to swap out governance people for one of their other ones if we had overall felt that the firm was a was the front runner, but they weren't. Second firm actually does some work for ICANN. The only thing that was cited was OFAC work, you know, related to being able to work with governments that are on the OFAC list, for instance, as we have an issue in the IANA area on that very point. But there may be other bits of work they've done, nothing in the kind of corporate governance or the type of advice, you know, that goes into the realm we're doing, but nonetheless, it was there. And again, before that was an issue, they were not a front runner either, but that kind of knocked them back a bit further as well, since, you know, we want not only for this to be independent, but for it to be for the perception of independence to be there as well. Just in case something goes wrong with the firm that we now have as the front runner and we don't necessarily feel that we want to go back to either of the other firms, that's, you know, to some extent still open possibility. We are quickly talking to two other firms that are a bit different in profile from these three firms. All three of these firms are, you know, over 1,000 lawyers, offices throughout the U.S., throughout Europe, some in Asia in most cases, kind of typical, if you will, first-tier U.S. law firms. The other two that we're talking to quickly are boutique law firms that concentrate in doing a full boat of work for not-for-profits and NGOs, and both covering corporate governance and internal issues, as well as kind of the more traditional issues that run into, such as tax and employment and all those things. There are really two firms in that area that, while there are a lot of firms that practice in the area, there are, you know, just two or three that really stand out as having a real strength in corporate governance, and not just primarily, say, tax-driven. That's pretty much where we stand. I think a little. So the firm that's the front runner has pledged to get us back information very quickly. They've already been moving literally after even the afternoon after they got off the call. They were already moving forward and giving us giving thought to the information they were going to give us and talking to the people they needed to talk to. I think I would also say, kind of last point, is that once we have retention, I think we will, you know, look at the client committee and, you know, how best to go forward in terms of work style and the like. So the client committee, as it exists today, is not necessarily the client committee in exact form that will exist later. See a couple of questions in the chat. To what extent is cost a factor? I think all three firms probably would be roughly similar in cost, in the sense that, you know, the billable rates of the lawyers were largely similar. We did think that one of the firms, kind of the way they were looking at working on this and staffing this, would probably be throwing, you know, considerably more hours than the other two into that. That didn't feel quite right to us. One of the firms, you know, came right out and said that, you know, they would offer us a discount on their usual rate. But I think all three firms probably would offer a discount. We do, as part of this next set of discussions, you know, fees are kind of in the next set of discussions. In terms of costs, and we have not asked for an estimate of costs. I'm not sure how easy it would be to scope this exact relationship. And while I think we want to be cost effective, if ICANN isn't asking for an extra step of estimating costs and scoping things in advance, which I'll tell you, you know, being a practicing lawyer is really one of the most painful parts of trying to deal with a new representation, because a lot of this is you take what comes as it comes along. It's not especially this, which is a very unique representation. It's very hard to go back and say the last 20 times that you did something like this, it cost approximately that, because there isn't that. And again, as far as budget goes, ICANN hasn't said cost is no object by any stretch of the imagination. And as I said, in Singapore, we should spend the money like it's our own. Nonetheless, there's no firm budget, but I think the idea is to try to manage this cost effectively and not, you know, if we burn through, you know, a very significant sum of money before we get all the advice we need, before we get all of the deliverables we need, that would be a bad thing. I don't think that would get the law firm fired, but it might get whoever's managing the law firm on behalf of the CWG and ICANN fired. Nobody wants to you know, make this into a money pit. So I think that pretty much covers maybe in too much detail where we stand, but, you know, given the number of inquiries that have been made, I felt it was better to err on the side of detail. As one very last thing, I would prefer to name names for the firms when I have all three names in hand. So I want to give the third firm where my contact on the West Coast a fair chance to respond before I do that. In any case, I'll throw the floor open for questions. I see Sean with a hand up.
Yeah, this is Sean. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you very much, Greg. Just a couple of questions. By the way, well done for all the efforts so far. Of course, I know a lot of background work must have been done. So, however, I do take my questions as that of a member who is a little bit concerned about the whole activity of the client committee, especially as it relates to timing. After this week, we'll have roughly 2 weeks to face-to-face. And so I'd like to hear specific response on the following. What is the latest date? I mean, the latest date that a firm will be selected? Because right now, I think it's important we set specific deadline for that. How long will it take for ICANN to engage the firm, especially in terms of payments? How long would that take? And the third one is, how long will it take to get the firm to deliver? Also bearing in mind that once the firm is engaged, there will also be need to perhaps come back to the group occasionally, need to clarify some things and get back to the firm. There is a need for some amount of time intervals in that. I think it's important to be certain of the reality of actually getting any delivery before the face-to-face, because with all due respect, I think it's just going to be a waste of time if we get to face-to-face and still we don't have a specific a specific outcome from the client committee. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Sean. I will say that was specifically discussed. The face-to-face and the timing toward that was specifically discussed yesterday. Definitely very much on our minds. I think with regard to the firm, again, you know, thinking just of the front runner, assuming that all goes according to plan, and we would hope to have, you know, back from them in the next day or two, their thoughts on kind of the rules of engagement, as well as on kind of the method of engagement. I am cautiously optimistic that we could have the firm engaged by the end of this week or very early next week. I think that everyone wants to get them in the saddle. They're ready to get in the saddle. So I think we want to make sure that we figure out at least in, you know, broad ways how to modify the typical relationship model so that it meets the needs of a group and situation like this. We're not going to spend time fine-tuning that like a jeweler for weeks. We just want, you know, to have some very quick ideas, and I think all the firms were thoughtful, but this firm was, you know, at least as thoughtful as the others on how to do that and how to do that quickly. So they've already indicated they've done several of the things we asked them to do to kind of get to the point where they can move and get us more information. So I'm very optimistic. I mean, you know, law firms are used to working hard and long and sometimes not always quick, but I think they do understand the quick. So I would say just basically end of this week, early next week for engagement, and really should be able to engage with us immediately, I think. And they're already thinking about the issues. Now, one of the things to figure out is what type of advice or deliverable or method of communication with the working group as a whole would be helpful between now and Istanbul and in Istanbul. It would be premature to say that we have an exact idea of that, because that's really something that has to be discussed with the firm. We figure they're going to have some good ideas on that. So, you know, it's not going to be a definitive written deliverable of many pages, but clearly we are aiming to get really useful advice that will allow really significant progress to be made in Istanbul on the issues for which we have legal advice needs in the first place. And let's see if the other questions. We have Olivier.
Thanks very much, Greg. Olivier Capanablon speaking. And in a sense, you're kind of asking the questions that I would like to ask and get answers from you about. So it's a bit of a tough one here. I note in the chat there are several concerns regarding costs. I see Donna Austin asking for to what extent is cost a factor in the selection, and also Kurt Pritz mentioning is there going to be an estimate of costs, or was there a budget established beforehand? And that somehow ties in with the question that I had, which was for you to explain the interaction between the CWG and the firm, or at least the interaction you see that would take place. Is it just going to be a straight document replying to all of the questions that we've submitted, or is it an interaction that goes back and forth, or are we going to have a lawyer from that firm for 48 hours in Istanbul at the end of the month?
I would say no, yes, and probably not. Let me unpack that a little bit. I do not think we will simply get an answer to all the questions we ask. I think we will get answers to most, if not all, of the questions we ask. They may not be packaged in a simple Q&A format, because that may end up being kind of beside the point of getting to distinguishing between the issues on the models and how they meet the needs and how they could be revised based on the legal expertise that we'll be retaining to meet the needs that we have. Clearly, you know, these models were designed without the benefit of legal counsel. I'm not going to count myself as such for this purpose. And, you know, they're probably just as good as a car designed without the benefit of an engineer. So we have a lot of good ideas and a lot of good parts, but they may not all work as well as they will after somebody with the expertise of putting those kind of parts together, making them run, can bring to us. So I think we will be getting something in the nature of answers to the questions. We'll have to decide, you know, again with the firm, what the best way is to deal with that. Clearly, you know, they're well aware that those questions represent, you know, real questions asked by people in the group that represent real concerns. So, you know, nothing's going to be, I think, ignored, but it may be better to, in a slightly different format than just straight Q&A. I do think that we will have the opportunity for real interaction with the firm, with the lawyers from the firm, maybe on one of these calls, maybe on a separate call. I don't think that we would have any lawyer from the firm with us in Istanbul. I do think that we would have them available and participating remotely as best as possible in Istanbul, and at least, you know, be available on particular times for particular topics, so that we can use their time most cost effectively. You know, we can discuss again budgeting and cost with the firm, and also with ICANN, since they are the you know, paying. And you know, I think it is to the credit of ICANN that they haven't said that this is going to be that they're going to want to look for some way to constrain the style and method in which we do this in order to meet an unrealistically low budget, or even a very conservative budget. Nobody wants to overspend. Nobody wants to spend a lot of money on lawyers, except maybe the lawyers getting the money. But even frankly, then they don't, because if you don't feel like you're being cost effective, you know, that's Yeah, that's shameful. And some lawyers are shameless, but usually not about that. And you don't tend to get hired again or recommended for other engagements if you waste people's money. So, and indeed, as I said, you know, they're cognizant that this is, you know, as I said, the firm that the front runner, you know, specifically brought up the issue of a discount, and I think, you know, they will look at to us to be cost effective and manage these things well. Any other questions? I don't see. Hi, it's Greg. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, Greg. That was one of the lines dropped off.
Okay, I thought it might be me that dropped off, or maybe you kicked me off because I've been talking for too long. As I say, I think we will get the lawyers on the phone with us before Istanbul. I can't guarantee that. We have to plan the meetings between now and Istanbul, but I think it would be my goal to have time with the full CWG and the legal team, some substantial time before the face-to-face. I think it'll be good to kind of break that, to have a disintermediated meeting. So I think that pretty much covers the client committee, and I think I'll hand it back to Lisa.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you for giving a very good update regarding the client committee. Well, we move on to discussing the principles that we actually have been working on for quite a while, and we just left it because we had a lot of other things to discuss, but now we have Martin Boyle, who are eager to help us finishing the principles. Martin, can you help give an update on the principles, please?
Thanks, Lisa. And first, my sincere apologies to the whole group for the delay in following up the discussions we had had over the Christmas and New Year break, if any of us actually did manage a break. Following the last discussion we had on the principles, there was a letter of 18th of December from the GAC chair to the CWG co-chairs, there were also the points that were made during the various discussions. Those I have tried as best I can to combine into the document that I circulated this morning and that I see is now up on the screen. I think that there is one substantive issue still in play, and that is on G2, which is towards the bottom of the second page, where I have put two competing texts in a box. There is also one issue which I highlight on E6, which is near the top of the second page, where the discussions on the appeals process that have gone on lead me to wonder whether we need to think about that in the light of some of the comments that have been received. And then, as I flagged in my covering email, there are a number of editorial changes, most of which were generally agreed and accepted during our last few discussions on this issue. Now, looking at the time, I wonder whether it would be most useful for us to take the most difficult item, G2, and then if we have any time left to look at E6, and then to run through the other amendments just to sort of try and clear them up. But I'm in your hands, Chair, if you would prefer to do those in a different order. We could start at the beginning and work our way through if you prefer.
Well, whatever you think is the best, Martin, go ahead.
Okay. Right. In that case, if we can move to G2 towards the bottom of the second page, I'm assuming you've all got scroll control, that there are we had a text that we discussed at quite considerable length in Frankfurt, but that in the GAC letter of the 18th of December, there was a suggestion that the text as written could be simplified just to read, "For CCTLDs, respect national sovereignty." There has been opposition and an alternative proposed which essentially goes back to the text that we discussed and agreed in Frankfurt, reduces it a bit, but that essentially, it seems to me, spells out a statement of local / national sovereignty, and adds a reference to IETF standards, or rather retains the reference to IETF standards. So that one then just says, "For CCTLDs, policy decisions may be made locally through nationally agreed processes in accordance with national laws." Then carries on for another couple of lines. I'm going to throw it open to you to try and identify whether people have got any strong preferences or objections to one or other of those formulations. So. And I see Elisa. Floor is yours, Elisa.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin. Am I loud enough this time? I tried to adjust my mic. Now, well, it's just to say that, you know, that the GAC has strong feelings about this, especially for the CCTLDs. So we are not very happy to give in on this one, actually. I think it's going to be difficult. The more you write in this column, the more discussions you're going to have. So for us, respect national sovereignty captures what we actually are after. I think that's the key is the one that we have most feelings about, as I said. So if we could find any, maybe we can put some of the alternative text in a footnote, or put it in a footnote in the document and keep the respect national sovereignty as the actual text in the principles. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. That gives a possibility of a way forward.
I'm still on the line, if it helps.
Yes, I was hoping I was about to call you. Of course, you're not on Adobe, are you?
No, sorry, I'm not.
Yeah.
So thank you, Martin, and thank you, Elise, for raising it. From a CCTLD perspective, I have to say I am advocating the more or less the text that was agreed in Frankfurt for very simple reasons. We are discussing a document that relates to effectively the principles for the transition, the transition document, you know, the transition. And the thing that's of utmost importance is stability of operation. And so I agree with both of the previous speakers that the actual language that is proposed in G2 alt, the longer of the two sentences, does seek to be somewhat prescriptive in that we don't want post-transition IANA to do anything, ICANN, that would impact the stable operation of CCTLD registries and GTLD registries, as we discussed during the Frankfurt meeting. I understand Elise's point, and I respect her point, but I just think we need to be very clear that this transition should not undermine the stable operation of the DNS infrastructure, and that is the reason why I would prefer to have supplementary wording that makes it very clear that both registries, the CCs and the GTLDs, must accord with the laws and the jurisdiction in which they are based. That's a given. That is not a problem. But what I'm trying to avoid is a situation where the stability of the DNS and the stability of the registry operation post-transition, this is a transition principle, is undermined.
Can I make a comment? It's Elise again, for the record.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Yes, thank you.
Can you speak up, though, please?
Okay. Could we then try to keep the last sentence, maybe, to combine it? So we take for CCTLDs, respect national sovereignty, and then post-transition of the IANA function, nothing will be done, do-do-do-do, the rest of the sentence in the alternative two. Could that solve it?
The reason for having policy forums is there are many CCs that have the multi-stakeholder model within their policy development framework, internal to the registry. And so I'm very much trying to advocate that the policy development framework for the CC and to a degree the GTLD, which happens in the ICANN space, is very much focused on multi-stakeholder rather than just one party, namely the government. And so I want to emphasize, I don't think we're miles apart, but I much prefer being very prescriptive to make sure that effectively local policy processes should be respected and post, well, you've already, you agree, I think we both agree, we need to add the second sentence. But if a government wants to take control of the policy processes that a national registry takes, or even a GTLD registry takes within its jurisdiction, it is quite at liberty to do so. But it has to do so in accordance with the laws of that jurisdiction. And I just think that would be a retrograde step if we go for respect national sovereignty, because you are not highlighting the need for respecting the policy development process which many CCs and indeed GTLDs that operate in particular jurisdictions have.
Again, a comment, if I may. I don't think respect national sovereignty is not restricted to something that is governmental led or for governments only. I don't see that at all. But, so I don't think that we are actually discussing against each other. As you said, I perfectly see the national process, multi-stakeholder process that takes place for each and every CC and GTLD, you know, according to their own rules. So how do we try to, as you said, could you, I stop there for the time being.
Okay, Lisa, You've got
your hand up. Thank you, Martin. Yeah, I do. And I was thinking, it seems that, the parties are quite, it seems to me that Paul and Elise are talking about the same, but using different words. And maybe we should try on list to have this solved between the three of you, because for me it seems like this is an issue for the GAC and Paul and then we can try and have this solved in a way that actually makes everyone satisfied with the solution or the wording. Would that be a way forward? And then to have the final decision on the principles on Thursday, we'll close it down as this is the principles, because we shouldn't discuss this too much more, because I think we're agreed on almost everything. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. That was roughly the conclusion that I was coming to. I would just perhaps throw into the mix whether, bearing in mind that Elisa is has identified quite significant for the GAC the need to have the reference to national sovereignty, and I wonder whether it would be possible then to say something along the lines of for CCTLDs, respect national sovereignty. And then a new sentence, policy decisions may be made locally through nationally agreed processes, and then go on to the end of, so in other words, just run the two things together so that the different communities have got the relevant and necessary words that they need to see for their communities. Now, I invite either of you to, either Elisa or Paul, to come in on that as to whether they would feel comfortable going down that route. Otherwise, I will propose that. I will propose that on list in preparation for the call on Thursday.
I think Lisa has indicated, and I'm in favour of that suggestion. Why don't we take this offline and have discussion via email? Because I have to say, I don't have the document in front of me, so I can't comment. It was just the high level I was anxious about.
Okay. Righty-ho. In that case, I will count on both Elisa and Paul to come back on that document during the course of tomorrow. If I can now then therefore move up to E6, just higher above the up on the page, where there is a principle there on appeals and redress. There should be an appeals process which should be independent, robust, affordable and timely on decisions that include binding redress, open to affected parties and open to public scrutiny. Appeals should be limited to challenging the implementation of policy or process followed, not the policy itself. Now, it occurred to me as I was reviewing the document that with the discussions on whether there should be an appeals process and what form that should take, and that which then sits in the design team, there still seems to be some doubt as to exactly what that one should be covering. Meanwhile, a number of the decisions there could or perhaps should be made within the wider framework of accountability. Now, again, I don't particularly want to reopen something that is supposed to be a principle and therefore should be independent of the implementation, but I thought I would at least A, draw it to the attention of the people on the call, and B, give you an opportunity to say whether we could or should retain this this particular clause as it is. Does anybody have any views on that? And I'll take no views as retaining the clause. Do we have a solution? Okay. I will work on that basis. For the remaining items, and bearing in mind we've got 15 minutes left and still AOB and closing remarks, I thought it's probably easiest to start at the top of the document. You've seen my email from this morning, and again, throw the document open for anybody to comment on any of the highlighted changes. So I'll throw it open for for the first page. I see people are typing in. So I'll give them a chance to come up with any comments they have. All right, Christopher Wilkinson has come in on the principles about appeals, and he says that is a very fine distinction. One person's decision to implement a NO could be another person's decision to take a policy decision to block a new GTLD. There are policy aspects to most of this transition. And I think, Christopher, that was what I was getting at, that if we are looking at things that are involving the policy, then that is something that really belongs in the CCWG's discussions rather than on specifically the IANA transition, a stewardship transition. Okay, and he's replied CCWG, okay. Right. The other person typing seems to have disappeared. Right. Any other comments on the highlighted changes? I see none. If anybody has got a chance to, if anybody has got any concerns, if they can flag those on list between now and Thursday, that would then be helpful and allow us to close this document off this week. Thank you. And can I hand it back to you now, Lisa?
Thank you, Martin, and thank you for doing this. Oh, I see.
Olivia's come up.
Yeah, so I'll hand it back to you.
Under the bar, Olivier, please go ahead.
Sorry for this. It's Olivier Cavalabel speaking. I know everyone's tired and it's been a long call. I've just noted one thing under separability, and I might have completely forgotten this, but I note that, is it 1.1 or I.I says to the ability to separate the IANA functions from the current operator, and then the third point here says to consider separability in any future transfer of the IANA functions. The three seems to be much weaker than one, because you've got the ability to separate the IANA functions, and then on three is just to consider separability. I'm not sure if something needs to be tweaked here, maybe.
Okay, and I've just noticed that Matthew Shears has come in online saying we are having audio issues and cannot follow the discussion, which is a shame because Olivier was specifically involved in this discussion. But
Matthew was.
Sorry, Matthew was.
Matthew was.
Excuse me. I numeral one is about the immediate separability from ICANN should it be warranted. So that is the condition of separability. The Roman numeral 3 was a suggestion that Matthew made that the separability condition needs to be retained should the should it already be separated, so that you can you don't take a new operator and then say, right, well, okay, you know, they now become the de facto and permanent operator. You still need to allow for that that to be separated. I think that was that certainly was my understanding of that discussion. Was that okay for you, Olivier? I'll have to take that as being a yes. And I see that Stephanie is has got her hand raised. I can't hear you, Stephanie.
Hi, Martin. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thanks.
Okay. So my comment is related to the multi-stakeholder principle language. And I don't want to sound like a broken record here, because I know I picked up this language some as far back as Frankfurt. But A, I think it's a little bit confusingly worded, any proposal for a group versus just whether we're talking about the proposal as a whole or every single group. Because I think when we look at the groups within the proposal, there are some that we have much more narrowly construed and either focused on registries or potentially criteria or based on experience, a certain experience criteria. So, I mean, I have some concerns about this statement, especially when it's qualified by a full range of stakeholders and that's not defined.
Okay, thank you for that, Stephanie. And certainly this has been a clause that has had quite an amount of discussion on it. I'm also conscious we've now only got 2 minutes left. Could I ask you, Stephanie, whether you could put forward a proposal for that wording, perhaps to make it more clear exactly what it is that we're looking for multi-stakeholder engagement on?
Let me take that back and try and think of a replacement for that.
That'd be very helpful. Thanks very much, Stephanie. And if I can chance my arm again, Lisa, back to you.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you for doing this. It's, well, it's still a lot of work, even though we thought it was almost finished a couple of months ago. So, but I'm glad you're doing it. And now we need to, we're going to any other business. And I see we don't have, usually we have the action points, and I'd like to have those under any other business. And I think that we would need an action point saying that the chairs will get back to the group with the design team list with priorities of those design teams that are having scoping documents. And also, I see we have put in that we would like an additional GAC person to the IAP team. And I think that we should have another action point for the CSC team that says that preferably we're having a scoping document out before the Thursday meeting so we can get this group started. And then I would like to call for if people want to join any of the groups, we're short of a GAC representative for the as is in the action points, and we need some participants for the CFC group. And remember, we're going to look at it. Are people qualified? Do they have the time to put in a lot of work in a couple of weeks? It's not to scare people away, but it's just that we would really like very dedicated people to join those groups, and we need them to go forward very fast. And I think, and we have the update on the discussion principles. There are also action points of those, but those are here. And then my closing remarks will be, I'm very glad that you all participated, and I'm very glad that we're getting somewhere with the design teams, and I hope that we're having a fruitful discussion on Thursday's call. I know it's very close to this call, and we might want to evaluate this in a couple of weeks if it's too close to each other, but having two meetings is actually giving us some pressure on moving forward. So we'll look at this. But thank you for participating, and we'll talk again on Thursday. Have a nice evening, morning, afternoon, wherever you are. Thank you.
Bye.